You're listening to Cadence, a podcast for creatives. I'm Hafsa.
And I'm Yan.
If you're new to the podcast, Cadence is a conversation around topics that we wish we'd been more informed about when we start out in our career paths. The hope is to arm you, the listener, with some takes and tips that might be of service as you venture out on your own unique path, and just to have a fun conversation. We would love to say thanks to our fantastic sponsor here at Fifth Avenue Studios at the Ann Arbor District Library for providing an amazing space to collaborate and produce a podcast in. It's so lovely and so quiet, and we love it here every time we come in.
Yes, we do. We're very lucky.
We're so excited to have a personal friend of mine, colleague, collaborator, instructor, Martin Thoburn. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Awesome. So Martin, I'm going to try and give a little bit of this back. I mean, there's so much to the story of Martin, but at a high level, Martin Thoburn is a pluralist artist working in a variety of different media with a background in graphic design, animation, and digital media. Martin has produced and directed award-winning short films, both live action and animated, and led diverse groups of multimedia storytellers. I was a part of one of those.
Sure in corporate, was.
in corporate design environments. Martin is determined to not be confined to any one medium, so he continually explores photography, live video mixing, design, collage, 2D and 3D animation, and motion graphics, among a bunch of other stuff. So,
yay.
Yeah.
Welcome,
right?
Martin.
Thank you for having me. This is great.
Absolutely. And I was excited to kind of bring you on board this podcast because, you know, obviously we work closely together in a variety of situations. We work together. We do IFFY together, Independent Film Festival Ypsilanti. And you have, you know, what's been really inspiring to me in my career in terms of being a multimedia designer. You know, you do video, you do film, you do projection mapping, all of this stuff. You've really been, you know, kind of explored a bunch of different mediums throughout your career, which I love because that's kind of what I was inclined to when I first started out in my career. I was like, I don't necessarily want to just be a graphic designer. You know, I love doing video, I love doing animation. So seeing someone with your career path is, I hope, super helpful for somebody who looks to have a similar career path.
Yeah, thank you. That's always been something that's very important to me, is being interdisciplinary. But I think where the commonality of all this stuff is kind of where art and technology intersect.
Yeah.
And that's always what's piqued my interest since I was a child. Mm-hmm. I was always interested in technology and, you know, everything from my little VHS players to old computers and electronics. Like, that's always what I was drawn to. And so I was interested in how to be creative with these things.
Yeah.
And so that's how I got into the arts, was through technology. Like, I never was a great illustrator or drawer or a traditional artist. And it was always like the tool and the medium is what inspired me
so
to create.
That's perfect. Can you kind of talk a little, you know, you don't have to give us the full story, you know, how you kind of got to where you are, but, you know, dig a little bit more into that backstory of, like, what was that sort of moment that piqued your interest in, you know, turning your passion for technology and digital media into, you know, kind of an arts career and kind of building from there?
Yeah, I think my first experience with, like, art and computers was actually in elementary school. My grandmother had, like, it was probably like a Mac Classic or a Mac 2, like one of those really old Apple computers that had an 8-inch black and white screen, but it actually had a visual interface. It wasn't just a terminal. It had a real GUI, you know, whatever Mac 9 or Mac 8 operating system, I don't recall, but it was very, very black and white. And there was a program called MacPaint, which is like a precursor kind of to Photoshop, I guess. It was super primitive digital art drawing tool. And, you know, had like a spray can brush and like a little eraser. It had all the sort of like Photoshop basic illustration tools. You had a pencil, a pen, a brush, and a little spray can. And because it was black and white, you had to work with like weird textures. So when you would do a background fill, you would have these weird like moire kind of chunky textures. And, that was the first time I realized, like, oh, you can do art on a computer, right? Mm-hmm. Before it wasn't just text and terminals and code. It was like, you know, a digital canvas. And so that was the first time I really got curious about that. I also, in middle school, had access to like VHS camcorders. Mm-hmm. And so my friends and I would like film and make back movies in our backyard, right? Mm-hmm. Well, movies with air quotes here. I'm doing the air quotes. you know, little home videos of us skateboarding or like being goofballs and making up like little sketches and skits and things that we saw on TV. but we had no way to edit it. Mm-hmm. Like I had no way to use. And somehow I was like, I want to have the digital canvas, like digital canvas version for video on the computer. Like mm-hmm. in my mind, I was like, how can I take the VHS player and this old computer and mash them together? And it wasn't until I was in college when I was young that finally that era mm-hmm. where computers were good enough and the mini DV technology yeah. came out where you could digitize tapes and edit on the computer at a home scale, game right? changer. You know, like where you didn't need tens of thousands of dollars. Like it was now in the home computer yeah. was powerful enough to handle video. So it took, 20 years from my childhood before it actually materialized. But that's kind of where my curiosity peaked, was really access to tech. And I feel fortunate that I lived in Ann Arbor, a mm-hmm. community that I had a lot of with the University of Michigan. I was really early in on the internet. Mm-hmm. You know, I started getting online in early middle school. Mm-hmm. You know, I was 11, 10, 11, maybe even earlier, AOL. We'd get on AOL in elementary school. You know, our elementary schools had computer labs.
Nice.
So even as a child in the 80s, late 80s, you know, we were using computers, and that wasn't true everywhere else in the country. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of it is a product of growing up in Ann Arbor, to be honest. It's like a city that is prides itself on education and access to the University of Michigan and Absolutely. Having friends and family that work for them and using their internet access or going to campus.
Email? Right.
Yeah. We used to go to North Campus and sneak in high school and then install games on their computers and have like LAN parties at the U of M computer labs. Yeah.
At Duderstadt.
We would sneak in because we didn't have U of M ID cards. So we would do what's called tailgating. We'd wait for a student to walk in right behind them. And, just hang out in the computer lab and install like a demo copy of like, you know, whatever, Quake. And then just,
there you go,
you know, play.
Don't you miss those bootleg days passing around Photoshop on a disc?
Yes. Oh, yeah. We probably brought a CD or something and installed the game and then just like ran it on the computers. Because we wanted to be more connected than we could. Like really high speed internet hadn't come out. You couldn't do this online gaming, but you know, the idea of like the LAN party where people bring their desktop computers over together. Yeah. So I'm nostalgic for all that. You know, I was definitely desired to be more connected in the internet and just that culture. Sort of surprised me. I don't know if I fully answered your question on how that turned into a career, but in high school, I went to then a brand new school called Washtenaw Technical Middle College. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to go to community really badly. That was the cool, you know, high school in Ann Arbor. Everyone wanted to go to community. And the year that I would have gone from middle school was the last year of the line where someone decided to go and stand in line 3 weeks before. Mm-hmm. And then there was a camp out for getting into the school. And well, I didn't do that. And my parents didn't do it. So I didn't get into community, needless to say, because it was too popular. So 1 year of Huron, I felt lost and I was like, oh, here's this new school, Washtenaw Technical Middle College. You get to take classes on WC's campus. My mother taught at Washtenaw Community College. And I said, hey, I'm familiar with their resources and things there. Yeah. They have computer labs and way better facilities than my high school does. Wait, I can go there for free. So yeah, I signed up, was a guinea pig program. And then I started taking graphic design classes in high school.
Nice.
So, you know, my journey into that career really started in high school. Okay. And it started at Washtenaw Community College through that program.
And
so,
you started with graphic design. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So there was no video program at Washtenaw Community College at that time.
Okay.
That didn't start. Dan Keir started that in 2006. So this would have been like 96.
Okay.
And it was called, at that point, it was called desktop publishing. Mm-hmm. It was very vocational and it was all like use Quark Express and learn how to, you know, like do layouts for books and magazines and posters, but you know, and then it very editorial. And then as this sort of grew, you know, they started calling it graphic design and, you know, that's where I learned Photoshop and Illustrator and, I got my associates in graphic design from Washtenaw Community College.
Yeah. Nice.
After WTMC or during WTMC?
I tried to finish the degree. It was during, but I didn't finish by the time I graduated high school. So I needed a year after high school to finally finish the degree, but I did do that. Yeah.
But still, to think that, you know, you're 20 years old and you could come out of it with your associates after, well, actually you're 18 or 19 at that
point.
Yes,
it's a game changer.
Yeah.
It is. For so many young people that are looking at middle colleges in Washtenaw County, we have some of the best programs that you could think of. ECA, Early College Alliance at yes. EMU, and then WTMC. Mm-hmm. I mean, can you tell us more about when you hit that moment, you have this degree from WCC, you're like, oh, how do I translate this into a career, or this is what I want to do?
That's a great question. So I'll tell you, my first real sort of like creative job that I got was right around that time. I was finishing my graphic design degree and I was in a color theory class. Mm. So what was awesome, well, first of all, I'll hype up how great WCC yes. was, especially at that time. University of Michigan had changed their arts program, their curriculum, to be more interdisciplinary. Mm. So you used to be able to go to U of M and like just study painting or mm-hmm. like draw illustration or something. And then like you'd have a deep, deep career. And they said, nope, we're going to be more interdisciplinary. Everyone's going to do a little bit of everything. And then no one's going to specialize until you kind of do your thesis project.
That was me. I was that guinea pig class.
And so they started that change.
We had 8 weeks of pottery, 8 weeks of wood, 8 weeks of...
Yeah. So you had to do everything.
You had to do everything. Yeah. You didn't have enough time to do anything. We just slept on the couches, the crusty couches, because it was pointless to go home. So that was that era.
Yep.
Okay.
And some of the instructors were frustrated because they wanted, hey, I just want people coming in really studying drawing and painting and taking it really, really deep instead of just doing surface level stuff. So they actually left. It was Elaine Wilson and Fred Horowitz, two U of M professors, left and went and taught at Washtenaw Community College.
You're kidding.
So all of a sudden, I at the art school was like, wow, now I have like U of M professors teaching at WCC who changed their career path because they were didn't like the new direction of what was happening at U of M. And so I had access to Fred Horowitz, who was teaching me color theory, and he had studied under Joseph Albers, who was like the color theorist, color guy, right? He didn't study color theory in him, but had him at, I'm forgetting what school he taught at. It may have been Yale or something. Maybe. But so here's like, I'm getting color theory straight from a guy who studied under the color theorists at Washington Community College. Like, absolutely incredible. Wow. Well, in that class, I met this guy named Jacob Alexander, and he was working for a small record label called Ghostly International, which I hadn't heard of, but I was really into electronic music. He was seeing the design stuff I was doing. He's like, Martin, you seem cool. Come work at Ghostly. So I met the guys at Ghostly. They brought me in as an intern, and then I kind of eventually soon took on kind of like their I was like a jack of all trades. It was a small little company, but my main job was the production manager. So I oversaw all the manufacturing of the CDs and the vinyls and the posters and the t-shirts. So I was doing pre-press stuff, like stuff I learned at WCC, like doing film separations to send off to some boutique label where they print the labels for the vinyl, old school with silkscreen color separations, like film separations. And then I was also like running and managing all the computers and network and hard drives and printers in the office as the in-house tech guy. But I was also doing a lot of the graphic design pre-flight work. So illustrators and artists that were designing the album covers would send me the artwork, and then I'd lay out the CDs and vinyl, make sure all the barcodes and songs and all there, and then send that stuff off to press.
It's really from start to finish. Wow.
Yeah. So that was my first sort of graphic design gig. And while I was working at Ghostly International, so I hadn't even finished my bachelor's degree at that time. I just had my associates and, was working there is when the video program started at WCC. And I was like, wow, this is when my childhood dream came true. Well, wait, you can do video editing computers. So I started taking night classes again. So I got my associate at WCC. But I probably have a master's degree's worth of credits from WCC because I just kept taking classes over and over. I just kept taking more and more classes just for fun, just to learn. Not because I needed a degree, because I just wanted to take more. Yeah. The color theory class was not required. Mm-hmm. Like, I just wanted to do it, And so that's when I got into video. Okay. That's when I started taking those night classes. And eventually I decided, hey, I got to get my bachelor's degree. I'm never going to do it. So I left Ghostly and went to College for Creative Studies. And that's where I took the my experience of all the video classes at WCC, which had a degree program, but I never finished it. Like, it was still just a certificate at first, and eventually was an associate's. I never finished it. And then I went straight and transferred to CCS and transferred in as a junior because of all the courses that I took at WCC. I'd also had a year at Columbia College in Chicago where I initially was going to pursue a graphic design degree there, but I ended up dropping out. So I sort of glossed over that little blip in my history, but I was actually an art school dropout. So I tried the art school route, dropped out, went into the industry and worked for a while. Then moonlighted, took the night classes for fun, and then finally went to CCS. So I was a non-traditional student, and I would encourage people to say, find yourself before you commit to college. And it's even more important now with how expensive tuition is.
Yeah,
you can't just take classes for fun at a place where you're spending $30,000, $40,000 a year on tuition. Like every class is an insane amount of money.
Yeah.
And that's my one regret at CCS is that I didn't take a few more courses outside of my major. Like they have a glass blowing studio. Mm-hmm. They have like metal. Like I wish I had just done something so like that. There, but I did that at WCC because the costs were so low.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I don't know what it is now, but it's a couple hundred a credit. And from what I understand, we're getting free community college soon too. So that's even better.
That's fantastic.
Right. Yeah. So that's where you find yourself. Like I really encourage people, hey, if you don't know what you really, really want to do after high school, just take some community college classes and figure it out.
Yeah.
There's no risk. Mm-hmm. Go travel the world for a year and just be yourself and find yourself and learn what you want to do. Because by the time I went to CCS, I was, in my, mid-20s. But I was so focused.
Yeah.
I was so determined and knew what I wanted to do and really enjoyed my time there. Whereas before, I felt like I was spinning my wheels, burning a lot of cash at Columbia College, going into graphic design because that's what I started, but not really.
It's not necessary.
Yeah, I just kind of got lost. They made me take so many fine art classes. I just wanted to work with computers. And they're like, no, you must paint first. And I'm like, okay. Where's Mick Paint? Like, I don't
know. Give me the spray can.
Where's the digital spray can? So I like that. It actually made me appreciate the fine arts. And when I went back to Washtenaw, I just dabbled and took a lot of fine art classes, like with Fred Horowitz and these other professors from U of M. But I felt like it was okay to do it there because I wasn't spending a lot of money. Mm-hmm. I didn't want this to be my career. Yeah. Like, I didn't want to go into fine arts as a degree.
It's a little more low stakes.
Yeah. And so I'm kind of losing my train of thought. But
Well, I kind of wanted to, because you're talking a lot about, this graphic design background and then, kind of coming to the WCC and they have this video, production course where you're actually able to kind of leverage that desire to, edit the things that you film. Mm-hmm. So I remember, when you were my instructor for After Effects and you had kind of given your backstory and you showed this film that you had produced called Frames, which was to me, kind of this really fascinating convergence of, what graphic design teaches and then what you learn as, in your video production courses. So can you talk a little bit about like how you started to merge those two skill sets together? Because I think that's something that film students don't necessarily think about as much, right? Of like how design can support video craft.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I will get to Frames. Let me back up just a bit on the motion graphics thing, right? So when I went to CCS, I got my degree in animation and digital media. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of, there was a couple different tracks in that program, an experimental animation, a video track, like a game design track or something. There was a whole bunch of different tracks. Mm-hmm. And I think I finished in the video track, but I took a ton of motion graphics classes. There's a guy named Harry Frank who taught there for just a few years. He was a laid off creative director, art director, and had a huge, amazing motion graphics portfolio. And I took every one of his classes. He took all the upper advanced motion graphics classes. And so I got really good at After Effects and motion graphics. Mm-hmm. And what I loved about it was how it combined all my previous interests in various art fields that I had dabbled in. Mm-hmm. So it combined graphic design, photography, and video, text, and I could bring it all into one canvas in space and mix it together. Mm-hmm. Like it was the culmination of all the things I had done. You know, in high school at WTMC, I did photography, analog, wet photography. Now I was doing digital and I could bring that stuff in and mix it with my graphics and mix it with the videos that I shot. It was amazing. It was like the mixed media platform. So After Effects was a game changer for me. So I'd experienced a little bit there, but really took that at CCS to the next level. And right after I graduated from CCS, I got a job, an internship in Germany for Adidas, which they say Adidas over there. Oh. So I'm going to have to code switch and say Adidas on this podcast, but I trained myself to say Adidas.
I mean, you could do that. That kind of rolls off the tongue.
Adidas? Yeah. Adidas. Yeah. That's nice. People are like, what are you talking about? So Adidas or Adidas, as they say.
Swing that? Was that through the connections at CCS?
Yeah. So that was through there was a job bulletin board for
come to Germany.
Yeah. Well, it was just like an aggregate bulletin board that had a bunch of job postings. Most of them were local. And then there was this one that said, like, looking for motion design interns at Adidas. And I said, sweet. I happen to qualify because I'm a German national. I was born in Germany. I immigrated when I was 3 years old. So that's a different story. But that's why I was qualified for this internship. They didn't provide visas. So they were mostly bringing in European interns, people in the EU. But because I was a dual national or a German national at that time, I was able to take this job, which was amazing. And while I was in Germany, I started submitting my work to film festivals, some of my short films. And the Dresden Film Fest, which is where I was born in Dresden, Germany, saw my work. And they're like, yeah, it's not good enough to get in the film festival. But we have this animation exchange forum for young up and coming animators. Do you want to be part of that? Okay. So they saw my film and they're like, they saw some potential in me. It wasn't worthy to screen, but they're like, this guy's got some talent to develop. So, yeah. So this exchange forum was really cool. It was with the Ukraine. Okay. So what they took is they took 12 Ukrainian animators and 12 European animators from Western Europe, brought them all together during the film festival. And for an entire week, we attended workshops, lectures, toured studios, watched films, and then spent 2 days in Kiev. Mm-hmm. We flew to Kiev for 2 days and then toured the facilities in Kiev. Mm-hmm. So we visited the university there, which I'm blanking on the name, but there's a large art school there. Our university had a large arts program and saw their animation studios there. And they were very much working in the old, kind of like Soviet style stop motion animation. You go in there and they had all these, not to sell them, stop motion puppets.
Right.
Like, so these huge sets of
stop sets.
Yeah, like massive, huge tabletops with stop motion puppets. Everything was very analog. I mean, they had a digital capture workflow, but all the animation was hand animation.
That must have been so cool to see.
It was really, really impressive. And, I had dabbled in some stop motion and claymation and things like that at CCS but there it was sort of lumped in as an experimental technique. It was no longer a path. Like, you couldn't study. Mm-hmm. You could study traditional animation, but there wasn't, no one went really deep on stop motion anymore.
Sure,
it was
sure.
really kind of like sort of a lost art. Yeah. We're doing on time. So while I was at this animation exchange forum, I met this guy named Mati. He was from Estonia. And during that exchange forum, they said, hey, everybody who participated in this, we have funding available. Pitch your concept. Anyone, get together with groups and pitch a concept and we'll fund it. So Mati and I came up with this concept called Frames. It was a short film. And we won the pitch.
Nice.
So they gave us 5,000 euros. For me at that time, I was like, awesome. I think a lot of people would have been like, okay, this is beginning of the funding. Get more money to get, use this as seed funding to get more money to make this film. And Mati, I decided no, we're just going to live off this money for a summer and make this film. And so we didn't work for an entire summer. He flew to America. And he rented an apartment and I was living really cheap in an apartment my mother had. And we just worked on this film for 3 months.
Nice.
And it's a mixed media and it was film. And it's because we wanted to utilize all these diverse techniques that we had sort of been working with throughout our early career.
Yeah.
So it does have traditional animation, does have stop motion and claymation, and it has pixelation in it, which is a stop motion technique where you animate real life objects. So the opening scene of the film is Mati is animating his body live action, and chairs and objects are moving and falling off out of a frame.
It's very trippy.
Yeah. And it's all about you know, the film frames has multiple meanings.
Yeah.
It's about this sort of transformation of self and media, like the medium changes throughout the film. Like you don't stay in any one world. So that you go into these different spaces and it's denoted by the animation style or the technique, I guess.
I need to watch this
movie. Very cool. We'll link to it on the page.
It went viral, like back when you could still go viral. Like, you know. Right,
yeah. Not just TikTok viral.
Yeah, like the old school viral. Like this was on Vimeo. And I actually learned it at the Exchange Forum. Somebody had a lecture on how to go viral. And I wrote everything down. I did exactly everything he said. He said, launch your film on a Monday at 9 in the morning.
Time?
Yeah, okay. He's like, do it in the morning. And he goes, and then message every single Vimeo staff member. Apparently, you used to be able to just message them.
Dang, okay.
This was like in 2010. You could just go to the Vimeo staff. So I
That's
sent...
not that long ago,
That's
even.
Not, yeah.
Well, it's 2010? Almost 15 years now.
Okay,
yes. Yeah. Oh, but still.
This time. So I had messaged every Vimeo staff member my film and just said, here, check out this film frames. And then I posted it on Motionographer and a few blogs and a few other places. And I literally just did a blast on all of the like channels where people were maybe interested in animation. Mm-hmm. I left that morning, went and did some things. And then by that afternoon, I checked in, it had 10,000 views.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa, okay, that's like,
that's impressive.
That's insane. And then by the end,
2010, right?
Yeah. And then like it was starting to get 10 to 20,000 views a day after that. And so like it exploded and then eventually became a Vimeo staff pick because the Vimeo staff saw it. And I think what happened is one of the Vimeo staff members liked it. And then people who followed that person saw that video. And so then it started going on this echo chamber. It started being posted everywhere. And I started getting work from it.
Nice.
So it launched my career.
Wow.
So
here's I did not know that.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, I started getting freelance work. People were emailing me. They were going to my website. And they said, Martin, we want to hire you. So it launched my career. Absolutely 100% launched my career. So my freelance career.
Yeah.
So that's when I came back. I was teaching at Washington Community College. I was teaching the After Effects class. So you were my student and then my TA. And I was freelancing. And I had clients locally, but then all over the country. And they were just finding me on Vimeo or finding me on my website. Mm-hmm. And I started getting tons of freelance work. And it was really this amazing era where the DSLR revolution was happening, web video started exploding. Yeah. So there was this huge demand for new video content. Platforms like YouTube were starting to explode, right? YouTube at that time was only 4 years old.
Oh, that's right.
And it just started getting high quality. Like really early YouTube was very low res.
Yeah.
Vimeo is where all the artists, like filmmakers, went because the higher quality video at that time, YouTube was low quality sound and video. Mm-hmm. Vimeo was like the pro version.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was an explosion of content needed to be created for websites, for online.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it was pre-social media, pre-phone, pre-mobile. So everything was still being viewed on desktops and laptops for the most part at that time.
And you kind of had to do more of that promotional footwork on your own too, versus the way it is now where it's like, you just kind of post something and hope it goes viral.
I had to get it out there.
Yeah.
So that was really a touchstone like moment for me that launched my career. You know, but you couldn't replicate that now, right? So I think like the eras are changing and the models are changing and production is changing. Mm-hmm. That sweet golden era, I sort of see it now. The high end is there. Hollywood, the super big budget productions are always there, but things are moving down to social, and social wants more volume and less production quality.
Yeah.
Production quality is actually, I think, a net negative on social. This whole, you just shoot it on your phone.
Yeah.
It's just about being in the moment.
Organic.
It's about volume.
Yeah.
It's about being in the moment, talking about what people are talking about, what's trending, and doing it quick and often and repeating it.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of, I think, the formula now. But back then, it was still like, do one thing that was very, very impressive and spend a ton of time on it and launch it.
Mm-hmm.
And people would be wowed. And you could distribute it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So you had the democratization of the tools and the medium and the distribution channels. But we were still trying to emulate high quality production.
Right.
When we were now just able to do it with our home computers.
Mm-hmm.
And less cost.
But I think my takeaway from this story that you just told is that influencers and content creators think they're going to hit it one time, and then they hope that they can just people will just ride their tailcoats right into the pennies they're making for however many hundreds of thousands of views they have. But yours wasn't an overnight success. Yours was like the years of continued learning, education, curiosity, right? WCC, Columbia, CCS. And then you hit that, if you call it, overnight sensation story, right?
So yes.
It's, and that begot you more and more and more work.
Yeah.
So I think the moral of the story that I'm hearing is that kids don't become content creators. Keep learning.
Yes.
Because what happens if you go out of vogue or things happen with the internet or TikTok gets closed or whatever? I mean, Martin, you have like multiple career, lifetime careers of knowledge in so many avenues. Like, how would you translate that now to a person that's listening and saying, well, I do have my phone. I do know how to edit. Like, I tried to tell my son, oh, do you need help editing? He's like, no, I already spliced it and I already put the titles and credits in it. And I was like, oh, how'd you do it? He said, iMovie. I did it yesterday in like 10 minutes. And I was like, of course you did. Course, you know, like, I don't, what is valuable in your industry now?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think it's the middle is shrinking, right? The the sweet spot of where I built my career is shrinking, this middle market, right? Where it's like high quality production for web and not social. Right. I mean, like when I mean web, I mean not social, like on-site video or video platforms like YouTube and Vimeo or wherever, you know, brands and other companies wanted to have long form content. Now this everything is moving down to that social media layer, and it's more like lifestyle and product placement and influencers. So it that is where things are moving, and it's going to change even more insane as text to video AI, generative AI is getting really good. And if it's short form and fast, it's all about volume and speed. So I don't know if I have necessarily the answer of like what it is I would do differently today, because I'm sort of working at a different altitude now, right? A lot of what I do now as sort of a creative director is, you know, be a creative leader, lead other teams, understanding how the business, what the business objectives are and the goals, and translating that into valuable content for marketing. But that's more on a B2B space and that business to business space, as opposed to direct to consumer. It's sort of the industry of cybersecurity. We don't sell to end users. We sell to other businesses. So it's a very different type of marketing motion than what most people are exposed to when they open their phones. Right. I'm digressing a little bit, but I think this is one thing of advice that I think I would give anyone in their career that I think still holds, especially for this notion of learning. And it's an ethos. I didn't come up with this, but I adopted it. It's work for free, work for full price, but never for cheap. And so what that means is if you want to learn, do something and you want to learn it, just do it. Don't get paid for it. Just do it. Work for free. Hey, your friend has a band and they want a music video. Oh, I've never made a music video. Well, just make one for them. Work for free. If you enjoy the project, if it's you're passionate about what you're doing and you want to learn, just do it. Like you don't need to make it a career. You just go do it. Once you've done that a bunch and you start making a bunch of music videos for your friends' bands, then work for full price. So then when Universal Record calls and says, hey, we have band XYZ and we've seen your music videos, we want you to make a music video for this band. Well, then charge full rate and don't work for cheap. Right. So that's what I mean. Don't sell yourself short. So if you're passionate about a project or you haven't done a thing and it's a new thing you're doing, it's okay to just like go do it and learn it. Because here's what, if you're working as a freelancer, people want to see that you've done it before.
Right.
That's really hard. Frames, my film, got me work because people saw and said, you can do that.
Right.
I want you to do that for me. So had I not just made the film and done it and got it out there, Now, granted, it was funded, but I mean, it was 5,000 euros for two people living on a summer. It's not like we were living the high life. Like we were, you know, scrounging it together, right? Like, and just barely doing this thing. And it paid dividends. Mm-hmm. It paid dividends. So working for free paid dividends. But once you know how to do it, don't tell yourself short. Don't like feel like the pressure is. When someone comes to you and you have that valuable skill, that's when you can start earning a living. Mm-hmm. That's when you can start building your career and work for full price, especially if it's something you're not passionate about. Like, okay, I don't care about this artist. They're not my friend. I wouldn't make this music video for you know, like why don't, so don't do it for cheap. Mm-hmm. Like don't sell yourself short. But once they see that, they're going to know. So that's the motto, I think, that that still applies today. Yeah. And so learn, do just, if you want to be a podcaster, start a podcast.
Exactly.
You want to be a painter, start painting. Yeah. And once you get good enough, people will pay you for it. Mm-hmm. And then you can get a commission and paint a mural for someone and charge full price.
Yeah.
Get
the full price. And if you don't know what full price is, go back to season one and do the assignments that we told you to do. Go call somebody, ask somebody that you trust. Go back to Lynette's episode talking about how to price.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's super important. And I've definitely made mistakes because you can, people want to charge by hour or project rate, you know, like how do you do it? I always did project rate. Mm-hmm. I hated hourly rate because in my industry, you don't want to, when people don't know what it takes to do something, it's very hard to justify your labor and say, why did I bill 5 hours for this, but 2 hours for this?
Right.
Yeah. And I just much preferred that I estimated all my labor and time and knew what the hourly rate that I wanted, added 20% buffer.
Sure.
To, in case things got, you know, like, you know, always have to, best laid plans never pan out. There's always something. Yeah. And then that was the price that I set. And you know what? Companies and businesses, they're not like people who budget like you budget your home finance where you're looking at, hey, product A and B, I need to decide and I'm going to choose the cheaper one. They're saying, I need to get a result. Mm-hmm. I need a product or content being made. And this is what I have. And it's kind of, I'm either going to spend it or I'm not. It's not their money. It's the company's money. Mm-hmm. And they'll be happy if they get what you want under that price because it's going to get them the results they need. So they're going to look at their budget. They're going to look at their goals and objectives. And if that fits and you're willing to do it, they're okay with it. They're not going to nickel and dime and say, well, how come I'm, this should be, you know, why am I paying $300 more for this and that? It's like, they're just happy that the deliverable was delivered.
They want that quality.
They want the quality and they want it known under this timeline. And then they're happy that it's spent and they got it. And they're not going to need to look like under the hood to see where all those expenses went.
There's a bit of confidence building that's associated with that, I think. Because I think, if, especially if you're newer to it, you're new to the freelancing game, you kind of have to have that confidence to know, like, this is what I'm worth, right? And we've talked about this on this podcast of, like, understanding, like, what goes into your labor, what that time is, what the value of that time is, and then just being confident enough to say, like, this is what I'm worth. This is what I can kind of get away with, and knowing that people will want that from you.
Yep. And not to throw a total wrench into this, but as AI tools and generative AI and other things in speed up workflows in creative, there's going to be a shift in the market on pricing. But right now we're in a very, very strange spot where things that used to take a lot of time can now be very, very fast. It's like, for example, storyboarding and concepting. You can now use generative AI to just come up with quick ideas to throw at people. So that used to be a large part of an expense, is just like coming up with concepting. Illustrating ideas. This is what the animation will look like. Because you can't just start animating and then they'll be like, why does it look like that? We need to do it differently. No, you need to show them this is the graphic style that it's going to be animated in. Well, now you can generate that very fast. So the question is, how do you price those things now? Used to have to hire a sound engineer if you had bad audio and they had to figure out how to do noise reductions and this. Now there's like Adobe Podcast magically removes all the background sounds and makes every crappy phone recording sound like it was done in the studio. And so how do you charge for that now? Right now, some people are profiting off charging the full rate that they used to, even though they have the one-click tool, because the client hasn't caught on yet that this is no longer a hard thing to do.
Well, but there's also, I mean, you want to stay in your lane, yep. right? Like you don't want the headache.
Nope.
You don't actually want to learn how to press that button.
Right.
I guess. But eventually the market will find its, will mm-hmm. rebalance itself on what things cost because of the tools. But it's happening so fast at a rate that the pricing models and the markets and what people charge mm-hmm. haven't caught up to what it really takes, and not everyone's adopting the new model yet. So it's a very bizarre time.
It is
very bizarre.
There's so much change afoot, but it's all about adaptation in some ways.
Yeah.
Rolling with the flow.
Yeah, absolutely.
I appreciate you so much for taking the time with us today, Martin. This has been, I mean, as always, I'm learning a ton. I appreciate you for sharing your knowledge with us, and I hope our audience appreciates it as well.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you so much for having the podcast. It was really fun chatting. I wish we could keep going. I'd chat all night. Here, so.
We can keep chatting. Yeah, I have a movie to watch. It's called Frames.
It's called Frames.
Oh, yeah, there you go. All right. Well, thank you so much for having me.
Cheers.
Thank you.
If you like this podcast, be sure to heart, like, and subscribe to Cadence wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at CadencePod, or check out our episodes and more at thecadencepod.com. While we are proudly based in Ypsilanti, Michigan, we are recording out of Fifth Avenue Studios in Ann Arbor at Ann Arbor District Library. And we hope wherever you're creating from in the world, you are marching to your own cadence. Thanks for listening.